I'd get a pallet of bananas, and the bananas are already too ripe. Can't give them out. Have to throw them away when I was back in Boston. And I never questioned, oh, where are those bananas coming from? Why are they already overripened? Maybe we should not be getting bananas. Maybe we should be using our money to be growing things in the area and not using this giant global supply chain that has farms. I've definitely come here and learned more of that and seen why we need to focus more on every bit of this exchange that goes on and not just be like, oh, the food comes in at the grocery store and there it is.
Welcome to Tangled Taproot, where we explore the unique stories of small-scale farmers in the Midwest. I'm Kristen.
I'm John Cowan.
And I'm Jackson.
And this is a production of Milk and Hummus. What is Milk and Hummus? We make flavorful hummus and ready-to-drink plant-based lattes that focus on locally sourced ingredients, sustainable packaging, and the humble chickpea. Today, we're joined by Thomas Smith, Director of Operations at the Kansas City Food Hub, a unique farmer-owned cooperative with 31 members dedicated to connecting agriculture with the community.
Thomas brings a rich background in food access work from Boston and a passion for creating meaningful connections through local food. Under his leadership, the Food Hub bridges the gap between small and medium-sized farmers and institutions like schools and restaurants, ensuring locally grown, high-quality produce reaches more tables.
So, grab your coffee, let's settle in, and dive into the inspiring journey of Thomas Smith and the Kansas City Food Hub. So really why I love the KC Food Hub, it has a unique focus on chefs, schools, corporate partnerships, groceries. So it's really providing that one-stop shop for businesses to reach out to local farms without having that extra cumbersome requirement of going farm to farm to farm. You can have a list and populate your menu accordingly or your inventory at your grocery store, what have you. And that's a real time saver. So that's awesome. Especially as a business, you know, having that one resource is pretty cool.
Yeah, knowing a place to go. What if you couldn't make it to the farmer's market that week, or they didn't have enough of a quantity you were seeking for a dish that week? That is helpful.
And the farms range from like small to medium. I think none of them exceed 20 acres. So, I mean, they all are technically that small footprint, you know, that we're mostly reaching out to.
So it's really kind of helping give legs and a voice to some smaller farms that maybe don't have much social media presence or maybe don't even have the hand power, manpower, woman power to get into Kansas to maybe drop off a product or to represent their farm at a farmer's market. So I can really see how that could maybe help mobilize and get some money flow to a smaller farm by being able to be showcased at a food hub.
And Thomas really emphasizes the importance of not only sourcing local, but the relationship between community and the farms that feed that community, and making sure that both are able to grow and develop, what's it called, like improve each other, like both.
Oh, like a mutual beneficial relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of exciting and inspiring to hear that he also goes a little bit above and beyond and doesn't simply just go around his multi-mile circuit picking up produce. He also works to try to coordinate and plan some small field trips for schools that might be using some of these farms' ingredients and get kids out to maybe perhaps literally pluck an apple or maybe help pull a radish out of the ground depending on the season. And I think when you get to see some of those dots connect, that can be a sort of life-changing light bulb moment for children and maybe put them on a slightly more nutritious or produce-focused diet.
Just a more mindful path. So much of the food that we consume, you know, we just don't know where it comes from and don't really ask ourselves. But when you introduce it that young, it really sets them on the right path.
Yeah, I think that's hopeful.
Kansas City, that's some place that's, I don't know if you call it the sister city of St. Louis in terms of, you know, culinary breadth and depth. You know, this food hub is, again, a 31-member farmer cooperative. So 31 farms, all under 20 acres. That's quite a footprint, probably a pretty diverse number of produce, and definitely families, and definitely highly impactful for the people that it would serve.
Completely. And one of the things that I took away from this interview was the integrity with which the produce is, kind of something that we already know, but just to say it again in a different way, because that always helps me, is that, so Thomas kind of described it as, this type of specialty produce is grown for what they want to grow. It is grown for flavor. It's grown for taste. When we're talking grocery store shipments or things that are, you know, cheaper commodity pricing, those specific vegetables and fruits are grown for shipping ability, for storage ability, for their durability. How many hits and bumps and box tumbles can they take without bruising and leaves falling off and soft spots? So thinking about that too, because it's kept so tight-knit and local, these folks can actually explore growing high-quality, flavorful heirloom things because they don't have to worry about, this is going
to the other side
2,000 miles across the country to get to someone's plate. So we need to pick the hardiest, most manipulated breed we can, you know. So that's exciting to think about that too. And we know that here. We taste it at our local farmers market.
Being a really big fan of the St. Louis City Soccer Club, you know, having rivals, you know, in Kansas City, you know, Sporting Kansas City is the rival. This food hub actually caters to that soccer club. The team's head chef or head, you know, nutrition coordinator is sourcing produce from this food hub. And I'm actually hoping that the St. Louis City Soccer Club has some sort of...
This is a great idea.
Yeah, definitely something to consider for sure.
Yeah. Here's a hint, St. Louis.
They might be doing something already, but yeah, I thought it was really cool.
All right. And now we're going to get into this interview with Thomas Smith of the Kansas City Food Hub.
Yeah, thanks for giving the quick tour. That was a pretty neat showcasing. If you could start just with your name and who you are.
I'm Thomas Smith. I'm the Director of Operations for the Kansas City Food Hub. I was talking about the tour. We just moved locations to Camby's Markets, which is a wonderful nonprofit that's leasing this huge warehouse near one of the many underground caves in Kansas City. And yeah, they included us into this warehouse, and we're one of like many food systems worker organizations doing some amazing work. But yeah, KC Food Hub got started, if you want a little.
Yeah, let's have a little background. What is the KC Food Hub?
Yeah, we are a 31 members, specifically farmer co-op. And that means that we're owned and operated by our farmers. I'm the highest staff member here as director of operations. We're a small, agile staff. We have two people under me, an operations manager and a lead associate. And we're hoping to hire one more part-timer in the next month or so. And so we're a pretty small team, but we have a lot of farmers who are supporting us. And so I report to a board of directors who are all farmers, which you don't get to hear a lot when you're talking about board directors. And so, yeah, we are a wholesale aggregator and distributor. So the whole idea is that they can focus on farming, and the clients, schools, restaurants, those kitchen staffs can stay what they're doing great at of staying in the kitchens. And we can grease the wheels in between and get all of the wonderful produce that are being grown on farms all across the KC metro area. And we do what, about a 125 mile radius from our warehouse to be included as a member.
125 mile radius. You say you have about 31 members. And what type of farms are we talking about? Are we talking about strictly produce?
Yeah, we have all sorts of farms. I was just talking to a hydroponic farmer who has a wonderful hydroponic lettuce setup, doing wonderful heads. We have another, I don't know if they're aquaponics or hydroponics. I think they're just hydroponics.
Okay.
In shipping containers. So we have two interesting newer technology farmers, but then we also have some traditional conventional farmers who are doing produce, doing some cattle, doing some chickens, you go there and you're like, wow, this is what I picture a farm. And we also have some wonderful organic farms doing really wonderful work, making sure that it's keeping within the certification, keeping within naturally grown certifications, stuff like that. We have a microgreen grower who just grows microgreens.
I love microgreens.
They're wonderful. We sell a lot of pea shoots and radish shoots and stuff, but I was just seeing wasabi shoots.
Wow. Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. Really like a little bit of kick, but not too much.
It still has some of the pungency in it.
Yeah.
But not like a paste that
yeah.
you get. Right. That's amazing. And then like the size-wise for the farms, I mean, you're talking about probably fractions of an acre all the way up to multiple acres farms.
I don't think anyone's over like 20 acres. but I wouldn't know offhand, to be honest.
We still very what's classified as a on the small spectrum.
We keep small to medium sized farmers. These larger farms are usually, first of all, growing more commodities, growing more, and usually have a different setup to them of needing really one client, whereas these small to medium range farmers are usually growing enough of variety that, and also specialty produce, that's the produce that is being grown is usually specialty produce, what would be classified. And so those are more of what the current wholesale market isn't really seeing, isn't really helping out with. It's really hard for a small farmer to necessarily get into a restaurant, let alone get into a wholesale distributor.
Does mean the farmers aren't going to necessarily have time per se to drive around to source all these different restaurants, make it and maintain the connections? Because that's probably also another thing, is that level of, I guess, customer service or what have you, where you have to constantly update quantity needs.
So that goes to what I was saying earlier of what we are trying to do is keep the farmers on the farm, doing what they love, doing what they're best at, and not having to call up 30 different restaurants, not having to deliver to 30 different places. Also, not having to deal with 30 different checks. We do one invoice for the entire month of sales to the farmer, one nice big check at the end of the month. And that really simplifies a lot of processes for the farmer. All the farmer has to do is go onto our website on Monday morning, post what they'll have available to be picked that coming weekend. And then our ordering period opens on Tuesday at 7 a.m. to goes until Thursday at noon. And we have all sorts of clients, restaurants, schools, cafeteria managers, nonprofits, go onto the site, look at what's available. And that's a big benefit to the schools and restaurants, is that they also don't have to call up 30 different farms, 30 different whatever, because one farm, especially a small farm, might not have enough week to week for a school district to fill their salad bar. But three farms might have enough. And so they can go on our website. It's a really great CRM software called Local Food Marketplace. I don't know if it's still like that, but I know their entire original engineering team used to be farmers. And so it's a really farmer-focused software. It's really amazing.
You're saying the engineers of the software were farmers?
Uh-huh. Okay. That's what I've heard. I was just watching an interview with their like CEO or whatever, and they were talking about that. So that might be a few years out of date, but it's really wonderful.
The origins were from that period.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And so basically what happens is that restaurants then go buy what they want, and they're basically pre-ordering. They're pre-ordering what's available to be picked at the end of the week.
Okay.
And then deliver to them the following week.
Sure.
So you buy something on Tuesday to get a delivery next Tuesday of it. And then I send out that pick list on Friday, or my staff sends out the pick list on Friday, and then the farmers pick it, or obviously for winter root vegetables or something, they're grabbing it from their harvest, or grabbing it from their storage, and then bringing it to the food hub. And so that really saves them too. Instead of having to drive around to 30 different restaurants, they're aggregating it all and then delivering it to one destination. And then we sort it all and bring it to restaurants and all and our clients the next week. And we do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday delivery days. So it kind of matches our ordering period. And it's really beneficial because you can have also the farmer kind of specialize. They don't have to, a lot of these places, if you go to a farmer's market, you have to be able to sell 30 different things. You have to be a grocery store.
Yeah.
For a CSA, you have to have enough availability to fill a box. Whereas we can have a farm just focus on leafy greens and then have another farm focus on something else. And so we're seeing the beginning stages of that, of getting farmers to be able to even specialize further into their specialty crop and grow what they want and what they are really good at. And then kind of like letting all of the farms collaborate and be stronger together.
So I'm really like a farm could focus primarily on a crop, let's say, like you said, leafy greens, like arugula or some other heirloom variety of leafy green that they really enjoy and can produce efficiently. And then they benefit from that efficiency and then from your marketing and networking. And this is all, like you said, 125 mile radius?
Yeah, 125 miles.
And then this is supporting restaurants, some schools, and the greater Kansas City area?
Yeah. We do some work with a nonprofit called the Alliance of Southwest Missouri. Uh-huh. They're a wonderful nonprofit. They just started this wonderful new food access program with grant funds from the USDA, but also the USDA gives it to the state. And then the state of Missouri's Department of Social Services distributes those funds. And the Alliance is one of those benefactors of the grant.
And they do these wonderful food box programs down in the Southwest Missouri, hence the name. And we just did one yesterday, 200 food boxes. And these are the size of those right there. What would you say? Maybe a foot by 2 feet by, and then a foot deep or so?
Yeah.
Quality leafy greens, quality root vegetables went into those. In January, we were doing about 240 a week. And in January, it's hard to come across local food.
It is, yeah.
So we were able to, with their funds, put apple butter, honey, stuff like that into these boxes, microgreens into these boxes, stuff that a lot of these people who are getting these boxes might not necessarily have access to or even seen necessarily.
Sure. So this has a real big societal impact locally, and that's like the main benefit of this partnership. It's a partnership with the Food Hub.
Yeah, the Food Hub and the Alliance of Southwest Missouri, and we're partnered, and they kind of contract us out to make these wonderful food boxes, and then we bring them down already packaged up in individual boxes of quality produce in each box, enough to probably feed 2 to 3 people for a week with just the produce. You definitely need like butter and all that by yourself, but
sure.
A supplemental for sure. And we give those out for free to communities in need in the rural areas of Southwest Missouri. Yesterday was Butler. We've done Neosho. We've done Joplin. And it's no income verification required, no nothing. You just show up and you get a box.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we've already seen a rippling effect of that, is that not only are you thinking, oh, wow, that's wonderful of giving these people quality, nutritious, fresh produce, but
very flavorful. I mean, which goes a long ways.
Of course, talking about flavorful and some of the lower cost, in quotations, food in America, you don't get the nutrition, you don't get. But what we've seen is that we put cheese in most of these boxes, and one time we put yogurt. And those are from two different creameries who are members of ours, Hemi Brothers and Skyview. And Skyview was put into the first box that we did with them in November. We did 280 boxes in Butler, and their label is on the yogurt. People went to their farm in last month or 2 months ago, told the creamery that, oh, I got a free box of your stuff back in November. I loved it so much. I came and found you on Google, and now I'm a customer of yours.
Beautiful. That's the idea. And also they managed to travel to the creamery, which is also an experience. Is not a lot of people. I mean, it's rare to be able to go visit a creamery or somewhere that's making yogurt, to see firsthand the operation and or just procure.
Yeah, and that goes to a couple points on that, in the sense of we're not trying to have all of any farm's eggs in our basket, and we're not trying to have all of our eggs in their basket either. We only want a farmer at currently. We might be upping it a little bit soon, but we want a farmer only to give us 10 to 20% of what they produce annually, because we want them to still have other market options. And so having our clients kind of synergize with their current clients or become their current clients is a wonderful option. And talking about going to farms and all and like having that experience, we try to organize field trip with our school clients to have their kids be able to go visit the farm that their salad greens at their elementary school are coming from.
That's really huge, because I know, especially early on, a lot of times you have no idea how this is produced, where it comes from, and it's exciting. I mean, it's sort of one of those things that's, it's a pastime to be able to see something grow, and then whether you're fortunate enough to plant a seed and see it grow and take care of it, then try it and taste it, and it's just that much more special. And then visiting and being able to pick something and then try it, it's much different than just going down receiving it. And I remember growing up, you mentioned you do source to schools. Growing up, I mean, I would have a few options. I'd have a cheese Bosco stick or cheese stick or a hamburger or hot dog. We'd have some of these red delicious pithy apples and maybe a banana as an option. And then there's some other things that came through, but never was there an opportunity to get quote unquote more of a farm produce that was, let alone in the area, but of higher quality. So that's a really unique.
We have like farmer cards. We pull out all the stops for these kids to identify and experience the farmer. And so not only are we doing those field trips, but we have little info cards with the picture of the farmer in their field right next to the salad bar in a lot of these schools. And we—
That's really awesome.
We're working with the high schools to go have their like video morning news shows go and do a little taping at the farms.
And so we're pulling out all the stops possible for the connection to be made for these kids to the food that they're eating. And the kids are already noticing. We hear all the time from the cafeteria managers that the weeks that we might not necessarily be able to provide lettuce, or they had to fill the lettuce with regular Sysco or US Foods, or even from before, and we've been able to provide them lettuce, is that the kids won't eat it. The kids can tell the difference, not only in just seeing it, but when they eat it, it really is rabbit food. It's sure. Rabbit food.
Yeah.
And when they eat the local food that is, you're not only getting into, oh, this stuff was harvested a week ago, and it's just going to be fresher than anything you can grow in California and then deliver. The timetable is just not there. But also, a lot of these varieties, our farmers are growing varieties of these leafy greens, of all of our specialty crops, that are made for taste and not made for storage and not made for transportation. And that's just the reality of a lot of agriculture currently in America, is that they're choosing varieties that have that shelf stability versus the taste. And there's always going to be that loss of taste when you're trying to have your seeds specialize into a specific other thing. You get farmers who are able to grow far better tasting, far more nutritious crops. And the kids taste the difference. Everyone tastes the difference. That's why really wonderful restaurants are choosing us. That we just got into Sporting KC. Are you familiar with them?
No.
The professional men's soccer team.
Wow. St. Louis Soccer Club, St. Louis SC last year. Just got that. And so, yeah, I've been a fan, and you guys beat us the first playoff game.
Gotcha. Well, maybe it's because their team is being fed with local food. Their training facility is, their chef is buying from us for their kitchen to feed their players. And the fact that the soccer team that's representing KC is being fed the same leafy greens that the kids in Lee Summit are, it is wonderful to me.
That's pretty unique indeed. Wow. And then, yeah, so bread for flavor, not for resilience in supply chain that's going multi-states. That's a big benefit for folks in the community.
And talking about supply chain and the waste of supply chain, we're doing that kind of harvest to order model where the farmer is posting what they think they'll have available. And then clients go on and buy what they want. And on Friday, we're only sending the pick ticket for what was sold. And so the farmer can either leave that, there's the potential that they can sell it again next week and that'll last long enough, or they can find other market avenues for it. Or there's a lot of other things we have after the harvest in here with us, and we can maybe synergize and get that gleaned, the stuff that's not being abused. And so that harvest to order model means that they're only bringing us, the only produce we're dealing with is produce that's already sold. We're never selling, throwing away stuff. Where sometimes for these larger box orders, like the Alliance, and we have a few other, we have two Food as Medicine boxes. There's this Food as Medicine conference in town today. And then we're doing some senior living centers, getting food access boxes. And so for those, we have a little food waste in the sense that you have 200 boxes to fill and you are buying like cases of lettuce from our farmer, and there's going to be 10 extra heads. And we give those to employees and we give those to food banks we're connected with. But on the vast majority of orders, nothing's going to go waste. We are not inventorying anything. There's some food hubs that do, but KC Food Hub is of the model that we're not trying to produce any waste at all.
So, I mean, this is really tight model, or I mean,
yeah,
business model. I mean, you're working closely with the grower, the farmer, and you're also having a really good use of technology to relay the demand. And then you have the area, I guess, customers who are able to receive this, and there's just very low waste.
Yeah, it's the future. Why are we putting all this money into technology that's not doing more stuff like this, making it easy for farms to connect to people? This is truly something that couldn't have happened 30 years ago. Without this software, it would have been very hard to manage something like this. And this real benefit of technology.
How long has the Food Hub been in operation?
We've been in operation since 2015, but we started in 2015, but I was like December or something, so we didn't really sell. 2016, we really kicked off, and we've had a long history, and I wasn't there for all of it. I'm actually pretty new. I got brought on in October. There's definitely been eras of the Food Hub where we focus on different things, and we didn't necessarily have this exact model, but we've had this model for the better part of 3.5 years of a central aggregation point, the warehouse we're sitting in right now. And then farmers delivering to that warehouse, and then us connecting clients and such to buy the available produce. on LFM. And so that model has been going on for about 3 years, and we've done really incredible sales. Last year we did a little over 400K.
And so the models over this time period has been being further refined to where we are in the last few years, like you mentioned. And I mean, look, I mean, you've outgrown your last space. You're in a new facility, a new warehouse. And as you mentioned in the tour, there's a lot of folks here that actually are also food related. And you mentioned that there's a composting.
This is kind of myopic because there's a few other organizations I won't include in this. But the really benefit of the three organizations here that kind of are sharing this specific warehouse space, the rest are more further out, and there's a commercial kitchen over there and the food truck and all. But we have us, who are the first part of the process of trying to sell and connect the farmer's produce to markets that people can actually buy and enjoy the food, and the farmer gets paid. And then we have after the harvest, which does gleaning, and we'll actually glean some of our farms, and some of our farmers sit on their board and all of that. So it's already kind of synergizing already.
For those that don't know, what is gleaning?
Oh yeah, gleaning is basically when you have volunteers go and harvest, not necessarily always harvest, but maybe collect pre-harvested produce, usually not on commodity farms, usually more on specialty crop farms, and then donate that to food banks and all other sorts of things. And after the harvest, does a lot of great work with Harvesters, which is the main food bank network in town. And they'll do a whole 18-wheelers full of produce that would have otherwise went to waste that wasn't sold. We in the farmers markets didn't get it sold. And then the gleaners can come in and get that and actually get it to people who are in need. And then the third organization that's in here that kind of completes that trifecta of the lifetime of potential, like of food, of produce, of potentially food, would be Casey Can Compost. And they're a composting company and really get the waste of these farms and waste of, they do a lot of work with restaurants and such, of the food waste that didn't get bought. And so you kind of have all three stages of trying to get the food utilized in a sustainable way.
That is solid.
Yeah.
That's a good full circle type model.
Yeah. And we're hoping to synergize as much as possible with them and do as much work as possible with them and get connected.
And so anyone that's a restaurant, anyone that is a school, and you mentioned a few other organizations, hospitals, I'm not sure, or?
Yeah, so I think one hospital uses us for their cafeteria, if I'm correct, but not too many.
But I mean, like, they could just go online.
Yeah, yeah.
KCFoodHub.com?
TheKCFoodHub.com.
TheKCFoodHub.
The in there.
Sure, it works.
And yeah, and they just get online and can create an account. And right now, anyone in KC can create an account. We do accept retail orders. We will be phasing that out in around June for our CSA. Our CSA is going to be pretty interesting because, like I was saying earlier, of a farm having to grow like 30 different things so they can fill their CSA. Now we can fill a CSA and have, some from one farm, some from the other. And so we have really the variety on our side that a lot of CSAs might not necessarily have. And what we're also doing is it's called Living Local. And that's because it's not just you're eating. We want you to truly feel like you're inhabiting the local community. And so what we're doing is organizing events at our farms bi-weekly to weekly throughout that 10-week period. So it's hard for a farm to, managing their CSA, have the time to connect with their community members. It's a lot. It's a job. You know,
like,
it's just difficult. You're already doing so much. And then Joe Schmo here, who's paying you $30 for a box of produce, wants to have a 20-minute conversation with you. And it's like, that's not how it can work.
Right.
A lot of farms do have events on their farm, but it's usually once or twice for the entire season. Now, because we have 30 farms, we're still only having every farm hold one event per season, but we have 30 farms, so we can kind of have an event every week or so and just have something for our members of our CSA to do and live local. And so that's what we're really excited about. We're partnering with a lot of organizations to be aggregation points and have their membership, whether it be employees or congregation members, or I was talking to you earlier before about HOAs and stuff, becoming members and serving as aggregation points. We're really excited about that and living local.
You have to become a member and then you have access to this calendar of events. And also you said you do field trips as well for students, which is different, but still visiting a farm for an experience.
And we're also connecting with some of our restaurant clients to also have some type of event there to highlight them as, it is a community. It's a business, but we're a co-op. So we're all about the collaboration and really highlighting the restaurants who have been buyers from us for 3 years, 2 years. They're really supporting the local mission.
And so we're hoping to highlight them in our CSA as well and have an event held at two different restaurants over the course of the summer to give them some business and show the people a part of our CSA that this is a place to go to eat that really supports the local mission, the community.
Nice. Yes, that is really unique. And I wish more cities and communities would sort of take some of these notes for their model.
Thing we're building right now, another really passionate thing I'm about right now, is what we're calling a local food corridor. And so if you see at a national scale, food hubs, some of the about 30% of all food hub sales, there's about 150 in America. From the, they do a, not a census, but a survey of all of them about every 2 years or so. And so last count, I think, was 150. And a lot, 30% of all national food hubs are sales between other food hubs, like network sales. And so we're trying to build that network from Missouri and the Kansas. We're kind of on that line for Missouri mainly. And we are already in the process of that, where we have a food hub down in Springfield Community Gardens, they're called. They do a lot more than being a food hub. They do a lot of incredible work of managing community gardens, managing, I believe, like the food for a hospital and a few other things. But they also are a food hub. And then we have Spring Creek Food Hub, which is down in Springdale, Arkansas. And they're kind of the bottom and we're the top. And we've been already this winter, this is brand new. This is like our first sales for this were in October, end of October, where Springfield was buying from us. And then we buy from Spring Creek and Springfield's kind of delivering for Spring Creek to us. And so we're moving a lot of still local food because that's beyond 125 miles, but it's still within kind of the state, within the state area and all. A lot of people, the USDA uses the definition of local food as either within the state you're in or 400 mile radius. And so that's well within the 400 mile radius. And yeah, we're really trying to connect and build what we're building and help build and like all across the state and connecting more dots to that food hub line. And so that's really important for us because you, if you want to kind of make a dent in this unsustainable food system that we have and make it more robust, make it more local, it's going to need centralized support. It's still, the hope is still that everything's local, that you kind of have these local chapters or local hubs or local whatever, local groups doing the good work, but you still need someone nationally helping lead, nationally setting an example and giving that support. And I'm not saying that's us. I think that can be in the future grown from multiple food hubs of showing that community across the nation and showing that support. Because if the current food system, I don't even want to imagine how much lobbying money they have to get all of the types of subsidiaries, grants, just extra help they need to fund the current unsustainable system. And to fight against that system, we're going to also need a little leg up.
Right. Well, I mean, in talking to a lot of these smaller sustainable farmers, they always mention like, hey, you can't force certain things to grow. I mean, without a lot of extra, whether it be fertilizer, pesticides, et cetera. It's like, so having these really unique growing conditions, climates, and then working with that, working with your own land and seeing what works and being able to sell that in that radius, still being local within the 400 mile radius, a lot of these communities could really benefit from that variety.
Yeah, for sure. And people are used to variety. And I'm just talking about how we're trying to fight against the non-sustainable national system. I think there's always going to be the room for the Twinkie. And I'm sure the American diet isn't going to be arugula and microgreens anytime soon. But, you know, I hope that on a summer's day, a kid has the option to enjoy some pea shoots because it's a really nice snack. And giving them that option and giving them that variety is all we're trying to do. And the farmers need a little extra help to make sure that they can make it make sense monetarily and have that extra support to make it make sense. Because cost of living, cost of taxes, cost of all of these things are rising and rising. And it's just harder and harder to be a small farm and not be bought out or not be having to quit. And the problem there is that you lose a lot of experience. Don't we want our farmers who are growing this experience to have 10 years of experience, not have to then quit the whole project and lose someone in the industry who's so good at it just because they didn't sell an extra 20 cases of Butterhead? I'd much rather try to get that person to continue growing and teaching the community and teaching more people, new farmers, how to grow. And so that's my hope.
Now, that is a very well-thought philosophy and one we should really learn from. You seem very passionate. I mean, did you always want to be involved with agriculture?
I've always wanted to be involved in community work. Yeah, back in Boston, I was in Boston. I was born and raised in a suburb of Boston for all my life. And I just recently moved out here and over the summer and really fell into this position and fell more in love with the agriculture side. Back in Boston, I was running a food access nonprofit that was focusing on more of the distribution side of working with the harvesters-like food bank in Boston called the Greater Boston Food Bank. And we basically connected with a lot of churches. The church community here in Kansas City is a lot more lively, but in Boston, especially the suburbs, what I found is that a lot of those churches have aging congregations and aren't able to pull in new members and are kind of dying out, and they have all of this extra space. And so what I did was I said, you had a food pantry here 20 years ago. You haven't been able to run it because you don't have the people to do it. I can do that for you. I can bring in volunteers myself and we will run your food pantry as a separate part. As long as you give us free space and don't like charge us any money for using your space, we will help the community in the way you want to. Because at the end of the day, they want to help their community. And so we were running about five, church food banks all across the suburbs of South Shore of Massachusetts. And then we were bringing some leftover produce and doing hot meal programs in Boston with some partner activist groups. So I was more on the further bit of it. Like the nonprofits that I work with now are kind of what I was doing back in the day.
Okay.
Back in the day as I'm like under a year ago.
Sure.
So I was always really trying to build community and community around food. But now I've definitely fallen more in love with seeing how we get that food and how we grow the community around that, because we shouldn't be segmenting it. Like I think that's definitely something I wish I did more back in Boston, of realizing where the food's coming from. Because to be honest, I'd get a pallet of bananas and the bananas are already too ripe. Can't give them out. Have to throw them away when I was back in Boston. And I never questioned, oh, where are those bananas coming from? Why are they already overripened? Maybe we should not be getting bananas. Maybe we should be using our money to be growing things in the area and not using this giant global supply chain that has farms. I've definitely come here and learned more of that and seen why we need to focus more on every bit of this exchange that goes on and not just be like, oh, the food comes into the grocery store and there it is.
I really love that bringing community and agriculture together. And that's something that I think in many communities is disconnected. So that's a really unique and amazing benefit that you bring for sure.
Yeah, it's a really important factor. A lot of human history is farming and be connected to the land and just feeling the food that you're eating, that you're subsisting on, knowing about it and knowing how to grow it. And maybe you don't grow it. I don't think every person should have necessarily a farm in their backyard. I think that's a little unsustainable, but everyone should know that, oh, this apple actually came from an apple tree and maybe know what an apple tree looks like and maybe one time in their life picked an apple.
I know that I'm always excited when I make some dinner or food from ingredients from the farmer's market, and I'm happy to share with folks like, oh, I got this ingredient from XY and it makes me happy.
And like you have more trust in it.
Yeah.
You have more, not only trust in the quality of it and that it's not going to make you sick, but also like this is a person. Like we're too making everything numbers and not even thinking about it. Like the idea that, oh, I was just talking to a farmer, the hydroponic farmer actually, about how the producing the lettuce isn't like producing a widget. It's so much more. The idea that these farmers are going and spending all this money on seed, spending all this money on soil, putting all this labor hour in to prep for a growing season that totally is uncontrollable from the weather. Like obviously good farmers are good farmers and can really grow good produce every time. But there are factors in play, and like it's not magic, but it's magic that there is all this wonderful food just growing out of the earth and people don't know about it and people don't have that connection to that like magician or wizard of the community that's growing wonderful food, and instead are just getting it from these grocery stores that have no connection, that have this fake photo that everyone knows is a fake photo and don't know where their food is coming from. And now not only are we showing you where your food's coming from, we're putting a face on it. We're having the farmer like say hi, which is very important to do for our community.
Yeah, no, that is. And so the Kansas City Food Hub and doing a service of bringing together not only 30 plus farmers, but any greater number of restaurants, schools, and community folk together bridging community and agriculture.
Thank you so much for your time interviewing. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing and giving me the tour. And we look forward to seeing and hearing actually from all your different farmers in the near future. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Thomas Smith, Director of Operations at Kansas City Food Hub. You can find the KC Food Hub's products on their website at www.thekcfoodhub.com. Visit social media at Kansas City Food Hub on Instagram and Facebook. This is Tangled Taproot, a production of Milk and Hummus. I'm Jackson.
I'm John.
And I'm Kristen.
If you like what you hear, please like, share, and review us. Again, thank you so much for listening. Send us your thoughts to tangledtaproot@milkandhummus.com. We plan to answer questions and share feedback. Until next time.